Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. To get involved, email techaccessweekly at gmail.com. Follow TA underscore weekly on Twitter or call 260-2-ASK-TAW. This is Tech Access Weekly, episode 139 for Wednesday, May 30th, 2012. I am Rodney.
And I'm Aaron.
And we're stuck in the honey tree.
Stuck in the honey tree?
Stuck in the honey tree.
Oh my goodness, I can't believe it.
And all of his friends had to pull and pull. Never mind.
More on that later. Yes, we will
sort
wait.
Sort of a show tease, as it were.
Ooh, tease.
Yes, exactly.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be back after 2 weeks.
Was probably a good thing that we did take a break because, well, there wasn't really a heck of a lot of news going on in the mainstream or the
accessible community. So it was kind of...
There's certain times of the year that are like that.
Exactly.
May, end of May, August, December, you know, everybody's vacationing and getting the heck out of town.
Yeah. It should pick up at the end of June, beginning of July with the ACB and NFB conventions should make it pick up just a tad, especially the ACB one, which has more, seems to have more tech stuff anyway.
June will be a big one because on June 11th, the WWDC presentation by Apple will be happening.
Yay.
So they'll have a keynote and most likely MacBook Pros coming out.
Do you realize that's less than 2 weeks from now?
Yes, I do. It's exciting.
It is exciting. Interesting. And so that should give us some more news. But yeah, with this past couple weeks, not too much. We're trying to stay away from the Apple rumors. There are a lot of those floating around, but we're kind of trying to stay clear here.
It's one of those things where people say, well, why don't you cover the rumors? And you're like, well, what's the point?
Yeah,
There's not really a point because they're always the same. This past week, I saw rumors that the iPhone 5 will come out in September or October.
Mm-hmm.
No, really? I mean, come on.
Well, if it comes out in August, then that rumor will be wrong.
Yeah, but Apple for the last 4 or 5 years has always had a fall presentation in September. They've always done new.
I understand that
their new iPods and music presentation. They always do that in September. So the last couple of years, it's started to turn into iPhone.
September. Well, the iPhone 4 came out in June.
Yeah, the iPhone 4 came out in June, and then it's kind of shifted because
to September.
iPods are sort of losing their appeal because people are using phones instead.
Right.
So it's kind of one of those things where you can almost count on, okay, March is going to be on iPad, June or late May is going to be new laptops or Mac Pro desktop computers, plus iOS announcements, and then September will probably be iPhone, iPod, and then maybe you see a refresh of MacBooks or something in November. I mean, that's the last few years has been pretty consistent with that timeline.
Mm-hmm. So, moving right along, we really don't have much listener mail to discuss either.
Yeah, Jim Ainsley touched base and said that the Bing 411 service is going away. And
I didn't even know there was a Bing 411, people.
Yeah, that was what I was saying.
It's essentially like Google 411 that was around a long time ago, Goog 411.
Yeah, it disappeared in 2010, I believe.
Yeah, and Bing 411 apparently took its place. I never heard of it before until reading his email. The information will still be available on the web at bing411.com. No telling when that will disappear. It's the same kind of information, telephone numbers and street addresses for various businesses and other places.
The Google one was pretty awesome.
Because yeah, that
was. You could do text messages. You could do everything you wanted to.
That was fantastic.
But sadly, it went away.
Yeah.
It was actually very good.
They had it for a particular purpose. And once, I guess, they felt like they accomplished their goal, which was trying to get their voice recognition technology for transcribing Google Voice messages into text, they were trying to make that technology better, and that's what the Google 411 was for. And when they felt like they had the information they needed, they discontinued it. However, their transcription leaves a lot to be desired, so they should have kept it.
Yes. But thanks to Jim, who is a longtime listener, who has been around for probably 100 episodes almost, it seems.
Something like that. Yay! We like the longtime listeners.
Yes.
Is it time for a ding?
Well, yeah. Why don't we start with a ding?
Okay.
All righty. We'll jump right into some security information. All of the major, I guess, antivirus companies, Symantec, Kaspersky, they're
McAfee.
All finding... Yeah, McAfee, they're all... Or McAfee, whichever way you want to say it. That's all crap. Anyway, they have basically started to see that in the first quarter of 2012, the number of malware instances has been increasing at an alarming rate.
What they've all noticed is that Android malware has just skyrocketed through the roof. And they're not sure if that's because of the amount of apps that it has increased that you can purchase, or if it's that detection services or programs are becoming more sensitive.
Yeah, so in the first quarter of 2012, they noticed that there were about 8,000 mobile malware pieces out there that you could actually have infections on your mobile phone. Well, 7,000 of those were identified to be Android, and they have so far collected 83 million samples of code, which is up from 75% at the end of 2011.
You mean 75 million?
75 million, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the mobile devices are slowly starting to become more profitable, probably for hackers. The biggest problem with Android is the fact that you can actually install applications from third-party marketplaces, and you could pick up bad little software.
Well, can't you install third-party apps from like Cydia and places, other places like that, with a jailbroken
device? Yeah, you can do that with an iPhone, but see, that's jailbreaking, so you're basically kicking out the idea of just buying things from the app store that Apple has supposedly vetted.
But couldn't you get malware on your iPhone
through
the same... The problem is they don't... Are there even any jailbroken antivirus apps for the iPhone?
I don't know.
You know, for jailbroken phones?
I do not know.
I don't either. If any of you have a jailbroken phone and know if there are any malware detection apps, let us know, because I'm actually interested. And apparently, according to iTunes, jailbreak is a four-letter word, by the way.
They're trying to crack down on people using a jailbroken phone on iTunes. And they're actually limiting people that try to use that. So, the way it goes.
Mm-hmm. There is a malware program or code or something that has been around from anywhere from 2 to 5 years, if not longer, and has been overlooked by the community at large. It is called Flame.
Yeah, there's multiple different names that you can hear this by, but the common one right now is Flame. This is a virus that everyone is thinking is sort of a government-developed virus. It is attacking people over in the Middle East area. The strange thing about this is the code base for it is over 20 megabytes. So it's larger than Stuxnet, which everyone has kind of heard about, that was like, I think it might have fit on 2 floppy disks or something like that. The unique part about this that makes it seem like it's more robust and developed is the fact that it actually has sort of a app system. In the 20 megabytes, it can actually interchange and change out different pieces as it needs to. Ooh. Like if they're trying to go for specific types of data or get around certain firewalls, they're able to actually do a code switch out. So I guess it's sort of developed sort of in terms of like object-oriented. You write it once, you can use it in many different places.
And doesn't it also disguise itself by running as if it were a secured website?
Yeah, it can do that. And this one is also unique because it doesn't appear to be going after just governments. It also looks like it is going after private citizens. I believe is it Iran that is getting this right now?
Yeah, so, Iran.
It's probably going to end up spreading, but which governments are behind it or whom,
we do not know. It's still unknown.
But guesses are it could have been out there for 2 to 8 years before anyone actually noticed it. Well, we had mentioned previously about the wonderful DNS changer that is currently being handled by the FBI, sort of in one of those poor management systems, because they took over the servers of the hackers that were redirecting infected computers, which they were estimating was 600,000, and they were redirecting to FBI restored servers. And on, I believe it's July 9th, they're going to turn off these servers, and people may or may not be able to connect to the internet because of the DNS servers will be gone. Well, Google is going to attempt to assist with this alert to infected PCs. They are going to try and look and see if the person is coming from one of these FBI servers, and then they are going to generate a alert on the Google homepage so that you can say, oh, you're infected with this particular virus that the FBI has been warning about.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a cool thing. So they're actually going to use their technology for good instead of evil.
They're not all evil. Okay, doing away with Goog 411 was evil.
Yeah, that was evil. That was a good thing.
Amazon is rolling out an app for the Xbox.
Yeah, this is kind of a quick little story. It was a couple months ago that they actually released the Amazon Video on Demand for the PlayStation 3. Well, now they have finally announced the one that will actually be available to Gold members of Xbox. So if you pay, I believe it's $50 a year or something, you can actually have access to the Amazon Video on Demand, which charges you $79 by having the Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think if you sign up initially, you get the first month of Amazon Prime for free.
Yes, I believe you do.
Yeah, and this comes out, did you already say this? I'm not sure. Soon after Amazon has rolled out similar subscription services to the PlayStation.
Yes.
And all that other stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
And the cool thing about this is it will actually work with the Microsoft Kinect for Xbox 360. So you'll actually be able to wave to Amazon Video on Demand and say, hey, I want you to play, go to the left, go to the left. Crap.
Oh, don't wave your hand around too energetically. You might knock over your microphone.
Oh, we're not that lucky.
Oh, rats.
In the mobile world of things, Sprint is actually raising data prices, or I guess they're trying to get rid of one plan, which is their $30 for 5 gigabytes of data. That one, totally gone.
Gone.
Bye-bye. They're now going to give you a $20 plan that will give you 2 gigabytes, or you can get 6 gigabytes for $50. I guess this is the hotspot tethering. The bizarre thing about this is if you actually want them to alert you to your usage, say, okay, give me an alert when I get to 50%, when I get to 75%, 90%, and 100%, you have to opt into that.
I know. Doesn't that seem just a little bit ridiculous?
AT&T is very quick to alert me that I have hit that really, really quickly.
Especially with me and my crappy Wi-Fi reception with my iPhone.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a concerning thing with Wi-Fi dropping.
You didn't get one of those recently, did you?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
I haven't got one of those.
Usually I get a text message and he gets an email. Yeah. Because the account is, he manages the account. And the text message pops up on my phone about the same time as he gets the email.
Yeah. But you don't have to opt into that.
No,
that
it's already there.
I guess that's their way of saying, hey, either you can opt in for this message or we can then charge you X amount of dollars for an extra gigabyte.
And it comes at 75%. Does it come at any other percentages? Because
75, 90, and 100%.
Okay, I use it 75% and then get really scared and hardly ever use my phone for anything.
Yeah, usually AT&T, if you're, say, on the 200 megabyte plan, it will alert you at, say, 140 megs. So you got about 60 megs left of your data.
Yep. Speaking of Wi-Fi hotspots, there are 5 cable companies here in the U.S. that are joining up to offer their customers hotspot connectivity.
Bright House Networks, Cablevision, Comcast, Cox Communications, and Time Warner Cable are all joining forthwith. Yeah. You can tell we have been on vacation for a week because enunciation isn't
working.
You're
going to get a little bit tongue-tied.
Yeah, my mouth is tired. Anyway, they are coming up with a metro Wi-Fi plan that will actually bring Wi-Fi to municipalities where you can actually get it if you are a subscriber to one of these particular companies. Well, so far they have rolled it out in Central Florida and New York City. More cities will be added shortly.
We have free Wi-Fi downtown. It's a little bit slow, but it does work.
Yeah, it actually does work, scary enough.
It's pretty cool, actually. That's a city feature. It's nothing, you know, that the cable companies are supporting. It's just our town deciding to be techno-savvy. So be on the lookout for this. Hopefully they'll roll it out in more places. Central Florida, that seems kind of an unlikely place to roll something out. Maybe that's where Bright House is.
Maybe.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, we have that around here somewhere.
Bright House?
I have heard the name mentioned before.
Oh.
I think they took over the contract from Mindspring? Way back when we used to have Mindspring?
That was Earthlink.
Well, there was Bright House something, I remember, because it was on one of the bills that we got way back in the day. Probably 10 or so years ago.
Oh, wow.
Anyway,
ding.
In an article that we had talked about last time when we were on here, a person, Shannon Colonna,
is being
sued by David and Linda Kubert for texting her boyfriend, Kyle Best, who then was involved in a car accident with them. A judge in New Jersey has ruled that, no, Shannon cannot be sued for sending a text message.
Yeah, basically what they were trying to allege in their lawsuit against her, she should bear some of the responsibility. They're saying she should bear the responsibility for his accident because he was distracted by her text message. And the judge interpreted it differently, and I think correctly, which is that just because you text somebody doesn't mean that you know that they're behind a wheel. When you text somebody, you should have the ability to assume that they're going to view the text at a safe place in a safe location. It's not your responsibility to tell them to go to a safe place to view their text. When you are driving down the road, likewise, if you're a driver, you have a duty to drive and limit your distractions. Just like they have been saying all the time, don't drive when you're sleepy, don't drive when you're, you know, if you've got the music up too loud, that could be a distraction. So, I mean, texting is a distraction that drivers have a responsibility to mitigate.
Yeah, at some point, car manufacturers or legislation is going to require that phones go into standby mode or something to where people aren't getting text messages while they're driving. You know, I mean,
people should be responsible enough to know not to check. I mean, you're in a car, you're driving, you can't be expected to check your text messages every minute or two.
But it went off. I need to know. It's that curiosity thing.
You can wait.
If I'm sitting here in the house and the text message goes off, I've got to look at it immediately because I'm just paranoid. Yeah,
you're in the house. You're not in a car driving down the road endangering your own life.
It's the same.
You're endangering your own life and the lives of other people. It is not the same. It just proves people don't have any respect for lives or of anyone, even themselves. Text message takes control over their physical well-being. Fine.
Yeah. Well, that's the way it goes. Anyway, Facebook is in the process of spending, I believe,
$100 million.
$100 million. That's a lot. For a website called Face.com.
Face.com essentially is some kind of like facial recognition thing where you can upload photos of faces and tag them with names. And it's going to be bought by Facebook. I'm not quite sure what they're going to do with it. They're going to use it for advertising and helping, you know, with their own facial recognition stuff, whatever that is.
Face.com has an app for iOS called Photo Tagger.
Yeah.
That will actually take familiar faces and label all of your pictures. Picasa that Google has does the exact same thing. You start labeling people's faces and then it'll go through and say, oh, is this Sally, the same person that you labeled over in these other 500 pictures? You know, that kind of thing. So maybe it's just going to be some way for them to actually bolster their new app, Facebook Photo or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Plus, it may go into the fact that they purchased Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So they may be trying to bolster their app altogether.
That's what it seems
by
like.
Having those two purchases going on.
The Instagram purchase wasn't nearly as much as the Face purchase. And I've heard of Instagram.
About the same.
I didn't think so. Maybe, anyway, no, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Some people think Facebook's going to die anyway.
Well, they did do the IPO while we were gone. And it started out at $38, and I believe it got up to $60 or so for a very short period of time, and then it dropped right back down to like $38.45, I believe is what it closed at for the day. And right now, I believe it's less than $20.
Woo! So,
yeah, the money-making extravaganza known as buying Facebook stock has not worked out too well for Zuck.
Yeah, and people were going to sue the company, apparently, because the price was not as, did not go as high as they thought it should have on the day one.
Well, and apparently the stock exchange was having software issues that were also impacting it. So there's a lot of issues going on and probably going to be a lot of legal stuff going on. Well, speaking of Facebook, in accessibility news, there is an app to try and help make that crappy website a little bit better on your mobile phone.
Yeah, it is called Voicebook. I don't think it's out for Android yet. I could be mistaken, but I know it's definitely out for iOS. Voicebook VO. So I don't think you need to put the VO in it for in the App Store in order to find it. VO, I believe, means voiceover. And this app seems to operate similar to Focus for Facebook, which is another similar app, although I think Focus isn't specifically designed for voiceover users. It's just a trimmed-down version of Facebook.
Yeah, and this one is free.
Yeah, and it's free. And it seems to do the same thing that Focus does right now, which is to allow you to read your status messages and your wall and post updates to your wall. You can't do any, you know, fancy stuff like pictures or I don't even think it'll allow you to approve or, you know, requests or change your privacy settings or, you know, anything profile related. I think it's basically a, you know, posting, reading kind of thing. And I have not tried it yet. I plan to in the future, but just haven't had the opportunity.
Yeah, the article did point out that if you just type in Voicebook, you'll find multiple versions of software called Voicebook. And it is not the one that you're looking for.
No.
You'll actually want to put Voicebook, VoiceBook, all one word,
yes.
Space VO, to make sure you absolutely get it. I will include the iTunes link in the post for this particular episode.
Another thing the article pointed out was that usually to get from one item to another with VoiceOver on the iPhone, you do a left-right swipe, or right to left, depending on which direction you go. With this app, for some reason, they have changed the gesture, so it is an up and down flick, as if you're operating a picker or an item on the VoiceOver rotor. So it's a completely different gesture. So if y'all are going, why isn't this working? That may be it.
Oh, good note.
Yeah.
Well, there is a new Plex Talk out.
The Plex Talk Linio. Linio, apparently, is a word in Esperanto. I don't know Esperanto, but apparently it is. That
Isn't
means
that a dressing?
Online.
No, that was Esperanza.
Esperanza was a dressing?
Yeah, metal mushroom.
Oh,
that was what their dressing was. Sort of a creamy ranch.
I totally forgot about that.
I had forgotten about it until just this moment.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's a word in Esperanto that apparently means online. Of course, Esperanto was a made-up language, so who knows? It's not a naturally constructed language.
Which, that was a good ranch dressing.
It was, too. Oh, my God.
Granted, for some people out there on other podcasting networks,
yes,
they do not care for
ranch dressing, so they would not have liked the Esperanza dressing.
Yeah, and calls it a cop-out if you are having to add stuff to it.
Oh, come
on. To make
it
edible.
Come on.
Anyway.
Maybe we should change the show title to Esperanza.
Nah.
Anyway, if I can continue with my Plex Talk story.
Oh, my bad.
Thank you.
What about this? Never mind.
The word Linio apparently means online, and that is what the Plex Talk Linio is designed to do. It is specifically tailored to go online to various libraries and services containing DAISY material and download that material from the various listservs or servers. And this applies, I guess, to like Bookshare and Learning Ally and other places in Europe that have libraries that loan out this type of material. It also supports reading from flash drives, SD cards, and God forbid, the Daisy CDs that are still apparently manufactured, if you have the specific player to hook it up to. It does not apparently do the recording like the regular Plextalk Pocket does. I don't think it has those recording features, and I don't know that you can view other types of media like music or other types of audio. I'm wondering if it's just restricted to DAISY files, DAISY audio and text files.
Probably be more information coming out the closer we get to
conventions. Yeah, it's not launched yet. Well, actually, it was exhibited in Germany at a convention just this week, but it is not, you know, for sale yet, I don't think. And we have a link in our show notes for an article that can lead you to more information on this.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, students at the University of Cincinnati have made the pill bottle.
The pill bottle of the century, ladies and gentlemen. This is specifically designed for visually impaired and senior citizens. It estimated that a lot of people in the next, 10, 15, 20 years are going to suffer from vision loss. And that's probably because a lot of them are baby boomers and they're getting older now. So this pill bottle is intended to help dispense medications. It's not out for sale yet, but it has several features that make it attractive to those with vision loss or total visual impairment. The pill bottle is 2 inches, 2 inches around, I think.
I believe it's also 2 by 2. It's 2 by 2 square and then 3 inches tall.
So the square design makes it easier to get pills out without having to turn it all the way upside down, because when you get older, you have that limited wrist motion.
So it's like a little bit bigger of a Pez dispenser.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
And the top pops open but does not come off. So it's more like a flip top, so you don't lose your cap. Additionally, the caps come in 8 different textures, and these textures will equate to whatever kind of medication you have. So if you have 8 different types of medication, you can associate each medication with a different textured cap. There's also an audio chip embedded into this. It's not really clear, though, as to what it's for, exactly what it does. They call it an audio fail-safe. I'm not sure if it's supposed to alert you when your medicine is low.
Or whether it gives you the description when you're not really sure what
it is.
Got.
Exactly. So we're not really certain. But this is a really cool thing. And no details yet on when it's going to be for sale or anything like that.
Well, a paralyzed woman has been able to drink coffee using a robotic arm.
This research has apparently been going on for several years. It has been found that if electrodes are implanted in your brain, in your motor cortex, you can control, by thought, manipulation of objects. People have been known to control cursors on a screen, for instance, on a computer screen, just by imagining controlling them. Implanting the electrodes into the motor cortex is making it possible for people to manipulate robotic limbs. They have been testing this with 2 different types of robotic arms, one of which was effective more of the time than another one. And there are 2 test subjects at this point, a man and a woman, and the woman has been successful in moving the arm close enough so that she can sip a cup of coffee.
Yeah, there is a DLR Lightweight Robot 3 from German Aerospace Center, and the DEKA arm system. I believe the DLR lightweight system was a little bit less effective.
I think that was 50% effective, and the DEKA was 70% effective.
It just immediately brings to light the Big Bang Theory when Howard Wolowitz uses it for a massage.
In a very mysterious organ.
Yes, and he gets
it's stuck.
Winnie the Pooh got stuck in the honey tree, as
and
it were.
His friends had to pull and pull and pull.
Yeah, but they didn't touch another man's honey tree.
No, but it did come off.
Yeah, thanks to the lady at the hospital. That is a great episode.
Oh my God.
Immediately what I thought of as soon as I saw the article.
Yeah, great show, great episode. A little too risque for this podcast. We're going to keep it family friendly.
Yes. Well, there is a prosthetic foot being made in Mississauga. Mississauga.
I believe it is in Canada, and it is an institute that specializes in research and manufacture of prosthetics and other medical equipment. They have teamed up with DuPont, who has manufactured the plastic for this particular foot, and the design has received some awards for design, especially since the plastic that it's made of apparently is very flexible, and so the foot can flex in all different kinds of positions and in all different kinds of ways, and it is called a rhythm foot. It is, I don't think it's out on the market yet, but they're anticipating it's going to be out soon, and it's one of the more limber prosthetic lower limbs around, I think. So,
if should anyone, open the doors for some people.
I mean, you know, if you're like Paul Sheldon and you lose a foot, you know where to get it. That is a Stephen King reference, by the way.
Well, Arkbotics has come out with a spider-like robot.
It is a Kickstarter project. It is an open source robot, so you can program the robot to do whatever you want. And it's called Hexy, the six-legged robot. And what is so sexy about Hexy?
I do not know, but it is sort of a red robot that sort of looks like a spider. It's got a cute little head on it and everything. Apparently, it is made of laser-cut acrylic, and it's powered by only two AA batteries.
Wow.
This actual robot is able to dance, play, do different things, even can play an electric guitar with its six legs.
Wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and there's a video in the article that we have, if anybody wants to look at that, with the movement and everything sort of jumping around and that kind of thing. So, kind of cool. The little thing that hops around. What were you? Well, here in the wonderful state of North Carolina, the government has told a blogger that providing dietary advice is illegal.
This guy was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and some other ailments a couple years ago, and he decided
he
wanted to put up a website and a blog to tell people about his experiences with trying to learn how to eat differently and vitamin supplements and all kinds of things, because his lifestyle had changed. He wanted to talk about it to the world so that other people would know. He has been cited by the government for doing this and by providing professional coaching advice as well, stating that what he is doing is illegal. And he has fired back with the First Amendment, that, you know, freedom of speech and all of that. And I completely understand where he's coming from. The professional coaching advice, though, is where it sticks for me. And I think probably where it sticks for the government, not necessarily the blog, but the fact that he is providing professional advice without a license. And in North Carolina, there is a licensing system for dietitians and nutritionists and all that kind of thing. And if you don't have a license, you could be, you know, cited for that, just like not having a license to practice law or medicine.
And I don't believe it was probably really clear on his website that he wasn't licensed or a physician either. That could also cause an issue.
Right. And I think, I mean, in my opinion, if he had said on his website, I'll charge you, $65 an hour. I am not a licensed dietitian. You know, I've been really clear about that.
Please consult your physician,
yada, yada. Then it would have been better. Because the problem is, if there's a problem, I mean, say his advice, someone alleges that his advice caused them health issues. I don't know. And they try and, you know, catch him for it. There's no system of regulation in place to handle that kind of thing.
Well, somebody could have complications or conflicts with their medications or something like that that he doesn't know about.
And that he doesn't know about and is not properly authorized to, you know, help with.
Yeah.
So,
probably
well,
not
again,
the smartest thing.
And,
in the
and what I was saying is there's no system in place to deal with that, you know, any legal implications that might happen as a result of him causing someone, you know, problems, or his advice causing people problems.
True.
So that's what a licensing system is for. The article talks about, you know, they believe that it's to drive prices up, which is possible, but it's also to provide a framework for safety. Lawyers, doctors, physicians all have that. The licensing system is what that's for, safety for patients and clients.
In another crazy story, Joe Quinn Amador Serapio Jr., a college student, age 20, in Florida, posted on his Facebook wall last week, I quote, "If anyone going to UM, which I'm assuming is the University of Miami, to see Obama today, get your phones out and record, because any moment I'm going to put a bullet through his head, and you don't want to miss that YouTube."
Is that what that said?
Uh-huh. You don't want to miss that! Exclamation point, YouTube! Exclamation point. He apparently posted another message as earlier. Well on there. But he is now pleading guilty to actually saying that he did this. His lawyer said that he did not have any intentions of actually doing harm to President Obama, but he just wanted to cause some political ramblings and stirring with his post.
Oh, geez.
If you do not know, that making threats against the President of the United States is a federal offense.
Yeah. Now you know. There's no word yet on what his sentence will be. Maximum of 5 years, I think. Wow. How stupid. Oh,
he's a college
student. I'm just doing it to get attention. They won't get me. I won't get caught. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't.
Just because he's a college student doesn't mean he can't be stupid.
True, but you would think he would at least know something like that, because it has been in the news over the last probably 20 years that he's been alive, that you don't do something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's craziness. It makes absolutely no sense.
Speaking of which, this craziness you've been listening to is Tech Access Weekly episode
139. If you would like to check out the stories considered for this episode, you can do so by going to delicious.com/techaccess/139.
If you would like to check out Book Hoarders Anonymous, you can do so by going to bhapodcast.com and checking out the latest episode with Shannon Curry and myself. If you would like to check out The Melting Pot Show on Mushroom FM, please tune in to mushroomfm.com at 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on a Sunday evening.
And if you would like to also go over to the Serotalk Podcast Network and check out the first episode of High Contrast for the Visually Impaired, you can do so. We currently do not have a feed dedicated to it, but if you subscribe to the Serotalk Podcast, you will actually be able to download it or find it on their website. Good content. We have another episode coming out probably in the next 2 weeks. All comments are welcome on that, and we greatly appreciate everybody listening, because it is actually picking up a little bit of traction, which is good.
Tell them where to send the comments.
You can send comments to resources@serotalk.com.
Yes. And also, stay tuned next week for a Tech Access demo cast.
Yes, that'll be coming out next week.
Next
we won't
Monday.
Tell you what.
No, we won't.
But it's coming out.
I will say, though, that I am one step closer to getting a hold of a reading edge from HIMSS, a braille display to use and do during a demo cast. So that's coming along.
Yay, finally.
I don't have it yet, so it's not this demo cast.
People are really asking questions about that stuff.
So I will get it, and when I have it, I will do a demo cast on it.
All righty. Very good.
Are we done then?
I believe we are done.
I can't believe it. It's early for us.
Yes, it is.
And we will
end this madness by saying you can follow me on Twitter at Rodney Edgar.
And you can follow me at Aaron Edgar.
And please keep the wonderful comments coming.
Bye-bye.
Bye.